Psalms 36. In Psalms 36, there's basically an outline of the psalm that is essentially twofold. The fear of God and then the attitude of the wicked. I see that on this first slide, Psalms 36, we simply want to note who David was. He was the servant of the Lord. I don't intend to look at all of these passages. Just get before you the heading that's on the psalm, the chief musician, the psalm of David, the servant of Jehovah, the wickedness of men, the goodness of God. And that's the essence of what we want to study in our lesson this morning. Now, as we introduce this psalm, David is simply making a very fundamental observation. And of all people, David was in the place to do that. As the king of the nation of Israel and as a man after God's own heart, he certainly was in the position to observe those who were not. And his experiences with Saul, I think, would contribute to some of that, as well as his experiences with Absalom, would certainly contribute to his understanding of the attitude of those who are righteous and the attitude of those who are wicked. And that's what we see basically in this psalm. So that's what we're going to be talking about in Psalm 36. Now, first of all, let's read the first four verses of this psalm. It says, "The transgression of the wicked saith within my heart, there is no fear of God before his eyes. For he flattereth himself in his own eyes, that his iniquity will not be found out and be hated. The words of his mouth are iniquity and deceit. He hath ceased to be wise and to do good. He deviseth iniquity upon his bed. He setteth himself in a way that is not good. He abhorreth not evil." With those four verses, we see the writer expressing the thought that's expressed by the Apostle Paul in Romans, the third chapter, and we won't spend a bit of time looking at this because there's a lot of misunderstandings and misapplications, certainly, from the text of Romans, the third chapter. Now, as I sometimes, quite often, do say, hold your Bible there at Psalms 36 and hold a finger over here at Romans 3 as well. But in Romans 3, I want to begin the reading there at verse 9. The apostle asked the question, "What then? Are we better than they? No, in no wise, for we before laid to the charge both of Jews and Greeks, that they are all under sin." Now let's pause there because the context, as we've tried to stress so many times, is so important to our understanding of the next several verses of Romans 3. When he said, "What then? Are we better than they?" Well, no, that raises the question, who are they? Who's being discussed under that pronoun they? Well, backing up in the text, actually to Romans chapter 1. We see in Romans the first chapter, the writer beginning in verse 18 is discussing the wrath of God upon those who are Gentiles. Those who ought to have known God as they saw him in his creation and know his power and his deity. Romans 1, 18 through 20 or 21, where he says, "Then they are without excuse for the ugly things they did." Now, beginning in the second chapter of Romans, the attention turns more from the Gentile to those who are Jews. And to those who are Jews, he said, "Wherefore," verse 1 of chapter 2, "thou art without excuse, O man, whosoever thou art that judgest. For wherein thou judgest another, thou condemnest thyself. Or thou that judgest doth practice the same things." Now, isn't that emphatic about the hypocrisy of the Jew? The Jew looked at Mr. Gentile, as we've identified this in the past. While Mr. Jew's practicing the same thing, he condemns Mr. Gentile for doing it. Now, when he begins the third chapter, the subject becomes more focused. And in the third chapter of Romans, he says, "What advantage then hath the Jew?" And I think sometimes we read that and we say, well, they don't have any advantage. But Paul says he does. Now let's look and see what it was. "What advantage then hath the Jew? Or what is the profit of circumcision?" Now look at verse 2. "Much every way, first of all, that they were entrusted with the oracles of God. What did the Jew have that the Gentile did not have?
Word of God.
The Word of God. He had the codified, and perhaps we need to identify that, he had the codified or written law of Moses. Now let's be clear that we don't want to come away from this and say, well, the Gentile didn't have any law. He had law, but it was the same kind of law that existed before the written law of Moses. That is, God spoke through the oldest males of the family of the Gentiles and reveal to them what his law was. We call that patriarchal law. Law that existed before the nation of Israel, before the giving of the law of Moses. But this made the Jew unique in that he had a specified, written, codified law that was given through Moses. And the writer says that's an advantage that the Jew had. And as you look further then, in verse 3 of Romans 3, for what if some were without faith? Shall their want of faith make of none effect the faithfulness of God? God forbid. Yea, let God be found true, but every man a liar. As it is written, that thou mayest be justified by thy words, and mightest prevail when thou comest into judgment. Now, having said that, dropping down then to verse 9, beginning this paragraph that we have under consideration, what then are we better than they? Now we've identified the they. The they is the Gentile that did not have the codified written law of Moses. But the question is, are we, that is, Mr. Jews, are we better than the Gentile? Well, no, we're not better than they are. For we both, that is, Jews and Gentiles, laid to the charge both of Jews and Greeks that they are all under sin. Now that's the thought of the third chapter. Everybody has committed sin. Now that raises the question, why? Why has man committed sin? Now beginning in verse 10, we have a listing of several quotations, primarily from the Psalms. Meaning from the Psalms, I should say, some from other places. But if you'll note beginning in verse 10, these quotations. There is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understandeth. There is none that seeketh after God. They have all turned aside. They are together become unprofitable. There is none that doeth good. No, not so much as one. Their throat is an open sepulcher. With their tongues they have used deceit. The poison of asp is under their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their ways, and the way of peace have they not known? Well, let's pause there. These are statements of fact. Alright? Nobody doing good. Everybody's committed sin. And that's the point that's established by the Apostle Paul in verse 23. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. But these statements are made in the Old Testament. As I said, primarily from the Psalms. That everybody has committed sin. You see the quotations. But in the quotations, it doesn't tell us why until the last one. And the last one is a quotation from Psalm 36. Do you see that? The last one is in verse 18 of Romans chapter 3. And he said, there is no fear of God before their eyes. Well, that's what we read in Psalms 36 verse 1. So these quotations of fact exist in Romans chapter 3, and then the last quotation in verse 18 tells us the why. The why is man doesn't fear God. And that's what the psalmist said, and then he begins to tell us why in the Psalms. Now here's what man has come along and done with Paul's quotations of these Old Testament Psalms. Man comes along and he said, well, there's not anybody doing what's right because, you see, that's the way God made him. So in the beginning, God made man perfect and upright and gave him a choice. Don't eat of the tree in the midst of the garden. But man exercised that choice in a wrong way and he ate of the tree. And so now, consequently, everybody thereafter has inherited this sinful nature. And that's why there is none righteous. No, that's not correct. That is just not right. And some have built a whole system of what I'll call theology on that incorrect understanding of the why man commits sin. It's not because of what Adam did. It's because of what we do. And you can read that in your New Testament as you look further in Romans. It's Romans chapter 3. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. That's a choice that we all make. Romans 6 could be added to that, if you like, verses 16 through verse 18. We make a choice. And in view of the choices that we make, then we are in this state. Now, Romans chapter 5 is the passage that I'm looking for. Verse 12. Yes, Romans 5, verse 12. Therefore, as through one man sin entered into the world, and death through sin, and so death passed unto all men, for that all sinned. Now that's the key. Why is it that we're in the state that we're in? It's because of the choices that we've made, not because of the choice that Adam made. You see, if that be so, then you were born into this world, as the Calvinists believe. You were born into this world guilty of sin, and that's why some folks baptize babies. They understand that baptism is for the remission of sin, but the baptism that they employ upon babies is not for their sin. It's for the sins of their forefathers. No, that won't work. And of course, we can quote Ezekiel chapter 18, verse 20, "The soul that sinneth, it shall die." The father does not bear the iniquity of the son. The son does not bear the iniquity of the father, but the soul that sins, it shall die. Now, there's our point, and that's what we see in Romans 3, verses 9 through these next several verses, telling us the condition that we're in and the why, because we've chosen to do that. All right? Now, that's what the psalmist said. When you go back and read Psalms 36, as I'm sure most of you at least have already done, when you read Psalms 36, you see the attitude that man has had, why, all the way back to the garden. Why did Eve partake of the forbidden fruit? And why did Adam partake of the forbidden fruit? You know, when God said, "In the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die." Here it is. All right. Satan said, "No, you won't die. Now you're emboldened to eat it." Why? What happened to what God said? What?
They believed the lie.
They believed the lie. You believe what Satan said over what God said. Well, why'd you do that?
Because they wanted to.
Because you wanted to. Because you didn't fear God. You didn't fear God. And that's what Paul says, and that's what David says in Psalms 36. You didn't believe God because you didn't fear Him. Now, I'll tell you what, folks. Perhaps this is a crude illustration. We've used it before. But if somebody said, "If you steal from me, I'm going to cut off your hand," would you be afraid to steal from me? Yeah? Well, if you'd seen me do that, cut off somebody's hand because they stole from me, I tell you that, you're going to be afraid of the consequences? Well, you know, there's all kinds of relevant applications of that current day in civil affairs. But if there's no consequence to sin, then you have no regard for the man who makes the law, do you? And that's why people choose to commit sin, because they have no fear of God. And Paul tells us that in Romans 3. And the psalmist told us that back 1,000 years before Jesus came. They did these bad things because they had no fear of God. Now look at how he elaborates on that. I want to look at this chart, though, first, if you'll permit me. How many times does something have to be said to convince us that it's true? Here's the inspired writer, Psalm 34. "Come ye children, hearken unto me, and I will teach you the fear of Jehovah." What's that tell us? Fear is something that we learn. And when you read in Romans chapter 1 regarding who God is and the demonstrations of the power of God in His creation, you have reverence and respect and fear. I'll couple those together because fear encompasses reverence and respect as well as regard for the consequences. Okay? But when we look in Romans chapter 1 and see God described as powerful and deity, He's somebody you're going to answer to. All right? So the psalmist said, we need to learn that. "Come and I'll teach you to fear God." In Psalm 111, verse 10, "The fear of Jehovah is the beginning of wisdom, and a good understanding have all they that do His commandments. His praise endureth forever. With all thy getting, get a good understanding," the psalmist said. All right? So, the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. I've used this very crude illustration many times, and I'll use it again because it's familiar to you. If you knew that there was a great big gorilla on the other side of these doors, And somebody told you, if you, Randy, go through those doors, that gorilla's going to wad up his fist and he's going to land you right up here on your back. You say, well, I'm not afraid of any gorilla. And so you challenge him. You go through that door, boom, here you land back up here. You say, well, I believe I can get through those doors. And you try it again. Boom, you're back up here. How many times are you going to do that before you say, well, you know, maybe I ought to use this door? What's it take? Now, for the rest of you who see that happen to Randy, can you be satisfied with that, or you got to challenge the gorilla?
I'm good.
You're good? Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm good. I'll go out this door. Now, the point of this is the fear of Jehovah is the beginning of wisdom. You smarten up right away when you see the power of deity, knowing that you're going to answer to this because of the choices that you made and the disrespect that you show. I'll have to answer. Proverbs 1 verse 7, the fear of Jehovah is the beginning of knowledge, but the foolish despise wisdom and instruction. Now that tempts me. I've got loaded on my PowerPoints this morning a sermon on foolishness. But I'm tempted, but I'm going to really work not to go there. But I want you to see this. If we have no regard for God, we do some of the dumbest things. Foolish things. And one of the things I suppose that illustrates that in my mind is we can read the book of Ecclesiastes where Solomon is telling us out of all of his great riches and the wisdom that he was blessed with above anybody else, the power, the position, all of that factored in, he was able to do anything that he wanted to do while at the same time record by inspiration the lessons that he had learned. And what do we do? Well, number one, probably don't read the book of Ecclesiastes. But problem number two is we read it and we say, I've got to run that race to see if that's so. I've got to have that experience to see if that's so. Well, Randy, again, would you think that Richard should have to go through that door when he sees what happens to you? Why can't we learn? Well, we're a fool. That's what the writer says. Carol?
Another illustration is the rich man and Lazarus. All those examples, and surely if you show him this, no.
Yeah, yeah. And you can read in the Psalms and the Proverbs, just Google the word fool, or if you have a Bible program, just Google that word, and see how many hits you get on what constitutes a fool. Now, if we're smart, then we receive instruction. If we're not, we don't. Does that make sense? All right, look further. Proverbs 1, verse 29. For that they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of Jehovah. Is that a choice we make? Yeah, see, I can choose to challenge the gorilla on the other side of the door, or I can choose to listen. That's just where that is. And then Proverbs 2, verse 5. Then shalt thou understand the fear of Jehovah and find the knowledge of God. Now, you say, well, that's enough. Well, perhaps it is. But I got one more page. The fear of Jehovah is to hate evil. Pride and arrogancy and the evil way and the perverse mouth do I hate. Proverbs 9:10. The fear of Jehovah is the beginning of wisdom. And the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Proverbs 10:27. The fear of Jehovah prolongeth days. But the years of the wicked shall be shortened. Now we need to catalog some of these as proverbs, general truths. Case in point, this one right here that we just read, the fear of Jehovah prolongeth days, but the years of the wicked shall be shortened. Was Jesus' years lengthened or shortened? Shortened. But did he fear the Lord? Oh yes. Yes. So a proverb is a general truth. Most of the time that's the way that it is. There are exceptions. But if something hits 90% of the time, you want to be that 10% that don't listen. All right. Proverbs 14:26, the fear of Jehovah is strong confidence, and his children shall have a place of refuge. The fear of Jehovah is a fountain of life, that one may depart from the snares of death. Better is little with the fear of Jehovah than great treasure and trouble therewith. Now that's just a few. Well, I got another page, but I'll spare you. Another page. So what I want you to see is the attitude of the wicked. He has no fear. Has no fear of God. Doesn't care. Now, does that bother me? Does it bother you? Let me pose this question to you. Just for illustration's sake. Do you remember when your children were little and you cautioned them about dangers and they didn't listen? And then it just grieved you to death when you saw them suffer the consequences. Now, what I'm talking about may be consequences for not listening. They got hurt or injured because they didn't listen. Or it might have been because of the discipline that you administered. And folks say, you know, this is going to hurt me worse than it does you. When I was a boy, I didn't understand that. But as a father, I came to understand it. So what we want to see is that if you want to be smart and avoid some awful consequences, then listen. Don't have the idea of independence. You know, I've got to try this. See for myself. Randy?
See, you know, we talk about the fear of the Lord. It's not just fear like something you're afraid of.
No.
It's fear that includes respect and includes love.
Yes.
And when Jesus was asked, what's the great commandment in the law? He didn't say fear the Lord. He said love the Lord. You know, the greatest commandment is that you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. But in the course of doing that, you fear it. Because you know who He is.
Yes.
And that's what comes with knowing who God is not only do you love Him, but you fear Him.
Yes.
Well, in the parent analogy, that's true too. If you have a healthy fear of, you know, what could happen if you don't do what your parent tells you, but you love and respect them, that's a lot different than an abused child who simply has terror in their mind because their parent has no love for them.
Right. And, of course, this brings us back to the conclusion that Solomon stated in Ecclesiastes. The whole purpose of man is to fear God and do what He says. There was a time in my life when I was preaching and was talking about this among some older preacher friends of mine, and they helped me considerably because my attitude at that time was that fearing God and keeping His commandments, that means that I love God and I have healthy respect for Him. And this older preacher friend of mine, he kind of snickered a little bit and he said, yes, that's true, but he said, when my kids were told to do this, I wanted them to do what I told them to do because they loved and respected me. But he said, I wanted them to fear the spanking that would follow if they didn't. Yeah, we get it, don't we? Anybody who's a parent, we get that. The consequences, they will be imposed. And so that's what we want to know in this. And that's probably enough on that particular point. But what I want us to see in Romans 1 and in our text of Psalms 36 is the transgression of the wicked says there is no fear of God before His eyes. That's what he says. I have no regard for God. Now, you want to see some further description of that? Read the next couple of verses. In verse 2 of Psalms 36, he said, he that flattereth himself with his own eyes, that his iniquity would not be found out and be hated. The words of his mouth are iniquity and deceit. He has ceased to be wise and to do good. He deviseth iniquity upon his bed. He setteth himself in a way that is not good. He abhorreth not evil. Well, let's look at those individuals. Because he has no fear of God, what does he do? What has man always done?
Whatever he wants.
Romans 1, yes. Once he has no regard for God and doesn't honor and worship Him as God, what does he do with himself?
Goes.
And of course, Paul in Romans 1 says that professing himself to be wise, he became a fool. And changed the glory of the incorruptible God for the likeness of an image of corruptible man, four-footed beast and creeping thing. Now think about how foolish that is. Because I don't have a regard for God, but yet I'm going to worship something. So in my own mind, I'm smarter than God is. And so I cut down a tree and I use some of it to cook my food and to warm myself. And the rest of it I carve into an idol and fall down before it and worship it as God. You can read about folks doing that in Isaiah 44. And what a fool we've become. But we're smart, you see. We know more than what God has said. No, no, that's not so. But this passage tells us, because there's no fear of God, then we flatter ourselves in our own eyes. Flattery. Well, what is that? You ever be flattered?
Self-righteousness.
Well, yes, self-righteousness, complimenting self, as it were. And that's what we see in this text. And I want to look at a few illustrations from the Psalms in particular. First of all, if you'll turn to Psalms, Psalm 10. Yes, there it is. Psalm 10, verse 11. Psalm 10, verse 11. The writer says, I'll begin in verse 6. He saith in his heart, I shall not be moved. To all generations I shall not be in adversity. His mouth is full of cursing and deceit and oppression. Under his tongue is mischief and iniquity. He sitteth in the lurking places of the villages. In the secret places doth he murder the innocent. His eyes are privily set against the helpless. He lurketh in secret as a lion in his covert. He lieth in wait to catch the poor. He doth catch the poor when he draweth in his net. He coucheth and boweth down. The helpless fall by his strong ones. And then the next verse. He saith in his heart, God hath forgotten. He hideth his face. He will never see it. Now look at what the fellows plotted. To seek and destroy. And what's his motive for doing that? Well, there's not any consequences. God won't ever see it. You mean him that created the heaven and the earth and all things, that he won't see it? You think you can do this with immunity? Yeah, that's the way that the man is thinking, because he has no fear of God. Turn to Psalm 49. Psalm 49, verse 18. This verse says, though while he lived, he blessed his soul, and men praise thee when thou doest well to thyself. Wait a minute. What is that? We're praised when? When the thing that I'm doing, I think that's good. And if you turn further to Psalm 94, and again I'd raise the question, how many times does it have to be said to convince us? In Psalm 94, a goodly portion of this chapter, although I have on the board verse 7 beginning, we'll begin there and read a few verses. It says, and they say, Jehovah will not see, neither will the God of Jacob consider. Consider ye brutish among the people, and ye fools, when will ye be wise? He that planted the ear, shall he not hear? He that formed the eye, shall he not see? He that chastiseth the nations, shall not he correct? Even he that teacheth man knowledge. Jehovah knoweth the thoughts of man, that they are vanity. Blessed is the man whom thou chasteneth, O Jehovah, and teachest out of thy law. Now, again, I would ask you just to consider your own life. Mom and daddy ever tell you don't do this? And you're out of mom and daddy's presence, and so you say, well, they won't ever know. And so you think you can do that anyway. And they won't ever know. Well, now, it's possible that you can get by with it. It's possible that you can deceive mom and daddy. But do you think that him that made the eye that's in your head, he made it, that he don't see what you see? Now, that's our foolishness. We think God won't see it. He won't ever know. He won't ever find out. But he will. And as you look further in your Bible to Proverbs chapter 7, I want to specifically look at this one. In Proverbs chapter 7, as most of you know, I like to preach on Proverbs 7. Proverbs 7 says, and I'll drop down into it, there beginning in verse 4. He said, say unto wisdom, thou art my sister, and call understanding thy kinswoman, that they may keep thee from the strange woman, from the foreigner that flattereth with her words. For at the window of my house I looked forth through my lattice, and behold, among the simple ones, and I discerned among the youths a young man void of understanding. This is sad, isn't it? Here's a young man. He doesn't have any experience with life, doesn't have any experience with living, and he's described as one of the simple ones. And he doesn't understand. But what's he doing? Verse 8, he's passing through the street near her corner. And he went the way to her house, in the twilight, in the evening of the day, in the middle of the night, and in the darkness. And behold, there met him a woman with the attire of a harlot and wily of heart. Now, what do you think is going to happen to this young, simple man? He is in trouble. He went by this woman's house multiple times, thinking the darkness would hide him. And behold, this woman met him. And look at how she's adorned. Now let's pause just here and note that clothes make a difference. She had on the attire of a harlot. She's clamorous. She's willful. Her feet abide not in her house. Now she is in the streets and the broad places and lieth in wait at every corner. She caught him and kissed him, and with an impudent face, she said to him, "Sacrifices and peace offerings are with me." Look at that. She's appearing to be a religious woman. I've paid my vows. I've offered my sacrifices. And then in verse 15, "Therefore came I forth to meet thee, diligently to seek thy face, and have found thee." Oh, you're the apple of mine eye. You're the fellow that I've been looking for all my life. She said, "I have spread my couch with carpets of tapestry, with striped cloths of yarn of Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh and aloes and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with loves." And then we look at verse 19. "For the man is not at home. He's gone on a journey." What do we know about this woman now?
She's married.
Here's a married woman doing the things that she's doing, deceiving this young man. He's taking a bag of money with him. Verse 20. "He will come home at the full moon." Going to be gone for a while, you see. "And with her much fair and fair speech, she causeth him to yield. With her flattering of her lips, she forceth him along, and he goeth after her straightway. As an ox goeth to the slaughter, or as one in fetters to the correction of a fool." Not good for this young fellow, is it? Now, what's her reasoning? "I can do this, and nobody will know. Nobody will find out, but God will know." Now, there's your key. You see, our problem is, when we look back over here in the 36th chapter of Psalms, that's how we begin to reason. We think we know more about things than God. We have no fear of God. Nobody will know. Nobody will find out. God won't ever see it. He won't know about it. But He does. And you'll find a number of these in Psalms. Psalms 94, as we read. Psalms 10. Isaiah deals with it. Ezekiel deals with it. They don't see the significance of what's being done. The wisdom writer described those in Laodicea. We're well familiar with this. We've just studied this from Revelation chapter 3. The things that they were unaware of, or they thought that wouldn't be found out. In verse 15 of Revelation 3, "I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would thou wert cold or hot. So because thou art lukewarm and neither hot nor cold, I will spew thee out of my mouth. Because," now look at verse 17, "thou sayest, I am rich, and have gotten riches, and have need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art the wretched one, and miserable, and poor, and blind, and naked." They were unaware, at least it seems, of the reality of the condition they were in. Now, how many of us convince ourselves, just like they did, everything's good? Now, I'll tell you what, brethren. You can read from the book of Jeremiah. We don't have those on the board, but you can read from the book of Jeremiah. And you'll note in Jeremiah chapter 6, Jeremiah chapter 23, Jeremiah chapter 5, if you want to back up to the introduction to the 6th chapter, verses 30 and following, you'll note that the people wanted the prophets and the priests to tell them wrong things. And Jeremiah said they wanted the prophets to prophesy falsely and so forth. And he said, "My people love to have it so." Now, I'll tell you what, brethren and friends, you find something that you want to do and you don't want it to bother you, you'll find somebody that'll validate your thinking, and you'll think, "Well, I can do that and nobody will know. Or I can do that and it won't bother me." Oh, but maybe it should. But you've got some preacher or somebody on hand in hand that tells you, "Oh, that's okay. Everybody's doing it." But you see, the problem is, God knows about those kind of things, don't He? And He said, "Don't do that, so you shouldn't do that." Now, that sounds overly simple, But look at how many passages deal with it. Sooner or later, it's going to become evident, and what you're doing is going to be revealed, and certainly you're not going to do it behind God's back. He'll know about it. Now, just a few other New Testament passages. If you'll note in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, we often in our authority class, we note verse 6, but I want to back up in that text just a little bit. In 1 Corinthians chapter 4, look beginning in verse 4. Paul said, "For I know nothing against myself, yet am I not hereby justified, but he that judges me is the Lord. Wherefore judge nothing before the time unto the Lord come, who will both bring to light the hidden things of darkness and make manifest the counsels of the heart, and then shall each man have his praise from God." Now look at what Paul said. When I look at my life, I don't see things that are condemning to me, but I'm not the judge. God is. So when I begin to justify myself in mine own eyes, that don't work, does it? But the psalmist is telling us all about this, because it begins with a lack of fear before God. And so we flatter ourselves and we think that, well, God won't ever find out. He won't know. My mother, bless her heart, she used to quote this passage to me, "Be sure your sins will find you out." Well, I didn't know she was quoting from Numbers. I thought this was something mothers tell kids. Yeah, you can't do this and nobody will know. Surely your sin will find... No, God said that. So because God said that, that's the way that that is. You can't do the things that are wrong and escape from the mind of God. He knows what you're doing. And if you turn in your Bible to Proverbs chapter 16 and look at verse 2, he says, "All the ways of man are clean in his own eyes, but Jehovah weigheth the spirits." Now what's that mean? You look at it with your own eyes, you say, "Well, I want to do it. Nobody will know. And maybe I can reason my way through it so I can rationalize that I will do it and it'll be all right." No, no. No, God knows. He knows. And He's the one then that will judge. But this is the attitude that David tells us. That's the attitude of those who are wicked. Psalms 36. Now, another point that I want to establish with you is the attitude of the wicked. His words are deceitful. Turn back over to Psalms. Psalms 36. In Psalms 36, verse 3, "The words of his mouth are iniquity and deceit. He has ceased to be wise and to do good." The wicked person's words reflect the state of his heart. Somebody has said, and I think rightly so, that your words are the window of your heart. They reveal what's inside. And that's so. They are iniquity and deceit, the psalmist tells us. You can look at this in Psalms 10. Well, perhaps we should take the time to do that. Psalms 10 and Psalms 12, they're right there close together. Psalms 10 and in verse 7, beginning in verse 6, he saith in his heart, I shall not be moved. We read this a while ago, verse 7. His mouth is full of cursing and deceit and oppression. Under his tongue is mischief and iniquity. And his reasoning is, God hath forgotten. He hideth his face, verse 10. He will never see. So the very words that he utters are deceptive, often deceptive to self. They are iniquity, therefore they cannot be trusted. And of course, the adulterous woman that we read about in Proverbs chapter 7, you can back up to Proverbs chapter 6 and see that her words were flattery and so forth. You can tell yourself a lot of things and often be convinced in your own mind that things are good. In fact, they are far from good. Another point that I want to note is he is not wise. The fool has said in his heart, and I'm going to resist the temptation to go to my charts on fools, but the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Now, question, why would a man want to convince himself that there is no God? He'll do what he wants to, yeah. And that's the gist of Romans chapter 1. And you'll notice in Romans chapter 1, when man thought that he was wise and he became a fool, he began to worship things that he had made with his own hands. And the text then goes on to tell us that God gave them up unto a reprobate mind to practice those things that are not fitting. Do you find it interesting at all that whether you're looking in the Old Testament times or New Testament times, and you read passages and then go from those passages and begin to read history of the practices of idolatry, they're all the same. Have you noted that? Oh, there may be some variation. But all practices of idolatry validate fornication in almost every form. Adultery, we're going to talk about some tonight, and the immoral practices of first century times. But when you go back into the Old Testament times and you read about the prophet Balaam, what did he teach the king of Moab to do to the people of God? Taught them to commit idolatry. How did he do that? And just take the pretty women of Moab over there and tempt them. And what was the result of that?
They intermarried.
They did. In fact, because of their fornication, the text tells us that 24,000 died. 24,000 suffered at the judgment of God because of the sin of fornication. Practice of idolatry. Now, why do you suppose that fornication in all of its forms is included in the practice of idolatry?
Satan. It's about Satan.
Well, yes, it is ultimately. But it starts with, it's about me. This is the desires of the flesh. So here's a way that I can satisfy the desires of the flesh. I can do what I want to, and at the same time claim to be worshiping.
Same thing you told Eve.
Yeah. It's a lie. It's a lie. Now, that's why you read in passages like Hebrews 13, verse 4, that marriage is honorable in the sight of all men. But fornicators and adulterers, God will judge. That word means condemn. God will judge. He's created a venue through which to satisfy the desires of the flesh. And it's not just do anything you want to. It's called a marriage. And that's honorable. All right? So we note that the wicked, he is not wise. He does not try to do good. Doesn't try to do good. Turn back again to Psalm 94. Psalm 94. Why would he? Psalm 94. You look beginning at verse 8. 94, verse 8. Consider ye brutish among the people, and ye fools, when will ye be wise? He that planted the ear, shall he not hear? He that formed the eye, shall he not see? Now, you look at these illustrations that the writer offers. Why would you not try to do good? You've deluded yourself into thinking that God who created you, he don't know what you're doing. What a fool. He devises evil schemes, the psalmist tells us in Psalms 36, verse 4. He deviseth iniquity upon his bed. He setteth himself in a way that is not good. He abhorreth not evil. Turning again to the Proverbs, look at chapter 4. Chapter 4, beginning in verse 10. There the writer says, "Hear, my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of thy life shall be many. I have taught thee in the way of wisdom. I have led thee in the paths of uprightness. When thou goest, thy steps shall not be straitened. And if thou runnest, thou shalt not stumble. Take fast hold of instruction. Let her not go. Keep her, for she is life. Enter not into the path of the wicked, and walk not in the way of evil men. Avoid it. Pass not by it. Turn from it. Pass on. For they sleep not except they do evil, and their sleep is taken away unless they cause some to fall." You ever accuse somebody, or maybe you thought this, not verbalized it, but have you ever thought of somebody, they must lay awake at night thinking up how they can hurt somebody? Well, that's just exactly what the psalmist is describing in Psalms 36. They devise iniquity upon their bed. He setteth himself in a way that is not good. Lays awake at night thinking how he can hurt somebody. Now why would somebody do that? Because he doesn't fear God. Has no regard for God. Doesn't fear God. Alright? Any questions or comments? I've kind of embellished this just a little bit. Perhaps more than is necessary. But I think this is a powerful passage in conjunction with Romans chapter 3. To help us to see why all sin and fall short of the glory of God. It's because it doesn't have any fear of God. No respect, no regard, no concern for consequences. Do what I want to. Thinking that God just won't know. Now, this is a good breaking point for me, Richard. How much time? I know you pushed the first bell already.
I've got about at least a minute and a half.
Oh, I think I'm going to give you a minute and a half. to start this next time on verse 5. Because verses 5 through the rest of the chapter is essentially the same subject. And it admires the goodness, the mercy of God. And so rather than to get into the substance of that discussion, I just want you to know what it's about and read this in preparation for next time. Now, after chapter 36 of Psalms, we're going to be looking at Psalm 65, because these are the Psalms that we've selected to deal with the praise of God. And then we're going to turn our attention to the 23rd Psalm. Okay, the 23rd Psalm. I've got quite a little bit I want to say about that. So I'm going to pause just here in our study.